This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton in for Antonia Gonzalez. Congressional Republicans maintained the health care bill that narrowly passed Thursday in the U.S. House of Representatives won't significantly affect those in the Indian health system. Based on calculations for the last version of the American Health Care Act, the bill is projected to reduce insurance coverage by over 20 million people nationwide. Representative Mark Wayne Mullen, an Oklahoma Republican and member of the Cherokee Nation, says the bill leaves the Indian Health Care Improvement Act completely intact.
This doesn't make any change to Indian Health Services. In fact, the whole section of Indian Health Services was left completely alone. And all we did with Medicaid is restore it back to what its intended purpose was, and that is to be state-ran.
The bill now faces an uphill battle in the Senate. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska indicated the Senate will likely take its time drafting a separate health care bill. Murkowski is on the Senate Health Committee that will play a critical role in drafting that bill. And in a statement Thursday, she said she'll work to maintain Medicaid expansion and to keep the ban on discrimination against people with pre-existing conditions. Advocates are wearing red for the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Native Women and Girls. A congressional resolution honors Hannah Harris, a 21-year-old Northern Cheyenne woman who went missing in July 2013 and was found murdered several days later. Her birthday was May 5th. Jacqueline Aktuka is Cherokee and a consultant with the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. She says awareness is the first step in addressing the issue.
I wanted to stress that this is on us, because the system is broken and has failed. So until we take action and create a groundswell across the United States, building from tribal communities, state level to the national level, I think the issues of the broken system will continue.
According to the U.S. Department of Justice, in some tribal communities, rates of murder for American Indian women are more than 10 times the national average. The city council in Canada's East Coast community of Halifax has narrowly voted in favor of looking at the use of the name of the city's notorious founder. And as Dan Karpinchuk reports, the vote came just a week after Halifax's Aboriginal poet laureate addressed the council.
Indigenous people in Nova Scotia have been trying for years to have the name of Edward Cornwallis removed from statues and public place names such as parks and streets, with very limited success. To them, the name Cornwallis is synonymous with a brutal period of history. Cornwallis had put down the Jacobite rebellion in Scotland in 1745 with rape, plunder, and mass murder. He was later appointed governor of Nova Scotia, where, within months of his arrival, Cornwallis was responsible for an infamous proclamation, a decree promising a reward of 10 guineas for every Mi'kmaq Indian taken or killed, with the proof being the body or the scalp. The mayor says the decision to revisit history comes after an earlier pledge to improve relations with the city's indigenous people. It also comes after an appeal by the city's Aboriginal poet laureate, 31-year-old Rebecca Thomas, who appeared before city council with a poem. Here is some of it.
There are a lot of things I can forgive and understand as human error, but not a single one of those comes in the form of inciting racialized terror, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but a lack of perfection is a poor excuse to keep Cornwallis enshrined, regardless of his abuse. Please cut him loose. Do you get what I'm saying, or is my argument obtuse?
Thomas says her father went to a residential school, and she always felt that something had been taken away from her. She says she grew up outside the community and has always tried to find a place to belong. Some councillors say they were moved by Thomas's poem. A week later, the vote to re-examine the issue was passed 15-1. A panel will now be created to consider commemorations to Cornwallis. A similar motion put to council a year ago had been defeated. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Hannah Colton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Not a support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Support by BNSF Railway, moving our economy for over 165 years. Our vision is to operate injury and accident-free with safety programs, training, and technology. More at bnsf.com.
Native Voice One.
our own medicine. We live on holiday, and we could always stay. So I wanna know, do I have your heart? I wanna know, when do we start?
Some of the music of the Congress is in town performing tonight for the first concert of the Jazz and Classics Festival. In the studio with me are two members of the band, Chris and Raphael, and also Reggie Schapp from Jazz and Classics. Thanks, everybody, for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, first of all, tell me about the band, how did it get started?
Well, the band started in Richmond, Virginia. Technically, it wasn't called the Congress then. Scott and John were running an open mic in Richmond, and then Scott moved to Denver, and he convinced John to move there as well. I think Chris was already living there.
I moved there around the same time.
Yeah, about like 8 years ago, and then that's where the band started, and been touring heavily ever since, and then they moved back to Richmond a couple years now.
Yeah, 2 years.
2 years, and I joined the band then, but I've known John and Scott for about 9-10 years, and known Chris for a little while because of the band, and that's how it got started.
See, that's folk and blues and rock influences. Who are musicians that you look up to?
Ooh, lots of them.
The band, Levon.
Yeah. Lots of music. I think we're all influenced by a lot of different styles of music, and it kind of, in that giant melting pot, kind of comes out how it sounds.
Yeah.
Now. Definitely for sure a lot of Southern music, Muscle Shoals.
Yeah, Muscle Shoals.
Stax. A lot of soul music. A lot of music that, you know, we enjoy ourselves. I guess it gets emulated in our music.
Mm-hmm.
How many members are in the band?
Four.
Four, yeah.
Where are they and what do they play?
I play keys. My name is Chris. We got Raph here. He plays drums. Scott Lane's guitar. And Jonathan Meadows is lead vocals and bass.
Did you know that your name, the Congress, would have such interesting overtones?
Yeah, we've heard that one before. We have no affiliation to the government body by any means. It's more of a the Congress of people, you know. I don't know if
the act of Congress coming together.
So don't be deterred if you think that way. It's nothing related at all. So. We get that a lot on our interviews.
So you're pretty much on the road all the time?
Yeah, we tour a fair amount.
We were actually just talking about how this year has been pretty hectic.
Yeah.
I've been all over the place.
We did our first international tour in November, and we did Spain, eight or nine dates in Spain.
11 shows in 11 days.
11 shows in 11 days, yeah. That's right. Yeah, we actually added one on there at the very last minute.
Yeah. The crowd liked it so much that they asked us for one more. It was our off day. We were like, all right, might as well play.
We tour United States, mainly, now that we're back in Virginia, mainly the East Coast, but, we have a good following back west, but when we lived in Denver, and we try to hit the West Coast markets as well, so we're touring constantly.
Cool. I just had a question on the top of my head, and I just forgot it.
That's all right.
Yeah, it's all good.
It happens to me all the time, man.
What's been your favorite place to play?
Oh, man.
There's a lot of those, too.
Yeah. We had a nine-hour layover in Seattle yesterday, and it kind of reconfirmed. I love that town. I love that city. We did a Sunday show that we were kind of skeptical about in Seattle, and it turned out great.
It was
like
great.
Listening
yeah.
room. Everyone was like really dialed in, and for a Sunday night, it felt good. I love that city.
Knoxville was fun. We played the Bijou Theater with the Hardworking Americans, and that was a really, really fun night.
New Orleans with Lake Street Dive, that was pretty awesome.
I wasn't there for that.
Oh, man, that was pre-Raph days. But we played House of Blues. Also pre-Raph days, unfortunately, we did Red Rocks, Film on the Rocks, so we got to play that legendary venue.
Denver's great. We'll be back out there at the end of the month.
Yeah, in May.
Pretty excited about that.
In May.
Is your first time in Alaska, Chris?
Yeah, it's my first time, all of our first time in Alaska, and we love it. We got good weather today. It feels good to be here. My father My grandfather came out here a fair amount to fish, and he always talked about it. Never made it out, though, but it's good to be here.
Any fishing plans, Reggie?
No, we're kind of keeping them busy, but they will be on the Blues Cruise tomorrow night, so they'll get a chance to be out in a boat for about 8 hours.
Yeah. Great.
You'll get your sea legs.
Yeah, right. Yeah, might need some Dramamine or something.
It's supposed to be sunny and warm in the 60s, so great. The weather
cool.
Holds,
we're
going to have a great day out on the water.
So the concert starts at 7:30 tonight?
7:30 tonight at Elizabeth Paradovich Hall. There's still tickets left, $30 for general admission, $25 for seniors, and $20 for students with IDs. It will be a lot of fun. As you can tell, these guys are going to just rock the house tonight, so come on down. And then tomorrow we still have a few tickets left for the 5 p.m. Blues Cruise. You got to be at the dock at 4:30 to catch that boat, and then we still have tickets left for the 9 o'clock as well, and you need to be at the dock at 8:30 to catch that boat, and that dock is the Stoddard Dock out at Ock Bay.
What goes into your decision-making process when you're looking for bands or individuals to play?
Thank God it's not my decision. I'm the organizer. But Linda Rosenthal worked this year to get our blues band, and she's
awesome.
Worked with the Intrepid Artists for several years, and they have been sending up some of the best bands. I mean, when they send them up, it's like the next year we see their names on Grammy sheets. So, guys, keep that in mind.
Hopefully,
hope so.
The next 2 years, we kind of expect that because we've had some really good luck that way.
All right, we got another song we're going to play. Can you describe it? It's called It Ain't Easy.
Ain't It Easy, yeah. This one was written by our guitar player, Scott. It was, I believe, it was around the time of a breakup. So I don't know if it's related, but it was kind of, that's how I associate the song with Scott, because he was kind of transitioning to now his now wife, but it was a girl from prior. It's just like I think of the band when I hear the song, very rock and roll, classic rock and roll. Anything else?
It takes on a little like a different, this is a little bit of a different monster when we play it live, which is fun.
Yeah, definitely.
This is definitely a lot more concise of a song for the record, but it's a good song.
As is most of these songs, we try to stretch them out and play them a little more rock and roll, harder and live, so... But yeah, we kind of did a stripped down version for the record.
Would you call yourself a jam band?
No.
I believe every band jams to a certain extent. I guess we get the moniker just because that just naturally happens. But
We don't really put. I have a hard time putting a label on our music.
It just kind of ends and starts and ends at rock and roll.
Yeah, yeah. We have so many different influences, and it really depends on our mood and where we are in our life and I don't know. It just varies. If you listen to all of our records, there's a lot of you'll hear a lot of variation with genre. So.
Well, where you are is Juneau, Alaska, and you're performing tonight at 7:30. Reggie, how can they get tickets?
They get tickets at the door, of course, but they can still get them on jazzandclassics.org, at Hearthside Books, and at the Jack Box Office. It's first Friday, so the Jack Box Office is open late, so they'll have tickets right up till 7 o'clock.
All right. Thank you for coming down and talking.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. We'll be right back.
That's the Congress with Ain't It Easy. Hey, I'm Andy Klein. I was a little late. Jeff Brown, thanks so much for stepping in and interviewing the Congress. I was jealous. I wanted to interview the Congress, but there they are. They're playing in Juneau. It's awesome. Mark Calvert's with me. Mark, thanks so much for coming in, man.
Thanks, Andy.
Brand new business, the Juneau Airport Shuttle.
You
so
bet.
Are you? Have you? So you're not taking a breath, man, right? You're
not at all.
Starting up a new business.
Not at all.
Tomorrow's the first really big day, right?
Well, probably. For us, it's going to be the 15th. We're starting
the
15th of May, and we're just hammering hard, and everything's going well.
Very good.
Yeah.
So tell me about the business, Juneau Airport Shuttle. Obviously,
yeah.
This is kind of. Because the idea is fast, affordable, and friendly service from the airport,
sure.
Right? Yeah.
You know, this idea came to us at some different conversations around town with Travel Juneau and some hotels, and they said we don't have any affordable mass transportation back and forth to downtown. So we put our heads together. It took a long time. It's a tricky puzzle. We figured it out, and we've partnered with most hotels downtown, actually. So we have three stops downtown. We start at the Baranoff.
Cool.
We go
wow.
to Four Points, then to the APK State Library, which is... Some people call it the slam, and then to the airport.
Right. So you've got these kind of set places to
yep.
go. Is it meant for tourism, locals, everyone?
Here's what's, you know, the what's deal. The,
yeah.
It's meant for both.
Okay.
So we have a price structure where the first person is $17. Groups of two or three are 30% off, and groups of four and more are 40% off. But there's a local price, and the
okay.
local price is $12. And you can book online at JuneauAirportShuttle.com, enter that code JUNOLOCAL, and bang, $12.
That sounds cool, right?
Yeah, I think
yeah.
people, you know, there are a lot of people downtown coming back and forth who'd like something like this, we believe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
it makes so much sense, and obviously that's just a trip that has to happen a lot.
It does.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
does. So we have, you know, on an average day, we have 26 departures out of downtown. We cover every flight, about two shuttles a flight, and I think we have close to 30 coming back from the airport every day.
How did you get into it? How did you decide? How did you get to where this was the business you were going to pour your energy into and start?
Well, we've been looking around for something, you know, for something. Where was there a big need that wasn't being served in Juneau? And this was a real tricky one. People have tried it before. And I could see if you just, you know, pull a van up to a hotel and hope people hop on, it's not going to happen.
Sure. Yeah.
You have to be organized on the back end. So we've done a lot of work. On the back end.
Like what kind of stuff? What kind of stuff that
you
like you hadn't thought about?
Fleet management, yeah? Reservation, scheduling.
How many vans do you have?
Well, we have three shuttle buses.
Okay.
So three Airporter shuttle buses. You'll see them all summer long in front of the Four Points. They've been gracious and given us parking spaces all summer. We have about 15 or 16 killer bus drivers. Really.
That's great.
Everybody
yeah.
lives here year-round. They all have their families here, friends here.
Very cool.
Invested. And some really, really nice people. So
mm-hmm.
the kind of people you want driving your grandma around.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
that are going to hop out and help you with your luggage and, you know, really professional, really nice. And we're going to get you there on time.
So what's the cost and what's all that stuff?
So cost yeah. is $17 per person. Groups of two or three, it goes down to $11.90 a person. Four or more. If you're pooled together, it's $10.20 a person each way. Juneau locals with your driver's license from Douglas or Juneau, you have to show that is $12.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and yeah. we're really encouraging people to book ahead. You know, we feel like there's a lot of demand. We're hearing a lot of demand for it. So. Yeah, you can book online at JuneauAirportShuttle.com.
All right. Anything else people need to know about the business?
Just show up.
Cool.
Just
new business.
Up.
Congratulations,
yeah,
I should say, first and foremost. Or, go, you know, getting underway with deciding I'm going to make this entrepreneurial leap and
yeah.
invest into this business. And,
yeah.
you know, that's a big move.
Yeah, and it's something, you know, we haven't done it alone. I mean, we have a lot of partners with a lot of these hotels. They've really gotten their skin in the game and been great help. And Travel Juneau, Downtown Business Association, APK, State Library,
great.
You name it. So it's a group effort.
All right. Well, it's the Juneau Airport Shuttle. It's starting off May 15th, runs through September 15th. It's these 14-passenger shuttle buses that we're going to start seeing all around town, and it's $17 per adult. But other discounts apply, as you said. If you get groups of three or four together, you can kind of that price goes down.
Definitely.
And then where can people find out more information?
JuneauAirportShuttle.com.
And what's the number if they want to book one of these?
JuneauAirportShuttle.com.
Oh,
but they can give us a call, too, if they want to book it.
That's one of the big things, too, is to try to really push it as an online service.
You really can. It'll take you 30 to 45 seconds to book and reserve
awesome.
Your seat. But you can also call us at 957-4570.
All right, Mark, thanks so much for coming in.
All
Let
right.
us know about the new Juneau Airport Shuttle. Congratulations, man.
Thanks, Andy.
All right.
ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. I don't care how much money I gotta spend. Got to get back to my baby again. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. When she wrote me a letter, said she couldn't live without me no more. Listen, mister, can't you see I got to get back to my baby once more? Anyway, yeah, give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. When she wrote me a letter, said she couldn't live without me no more. Listen, mister, can't you see I got to get back to my baby once more? Anyway, yeah, give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. My baby.
Healthy Smiles are here. On May 22nd, Search will open the doors to its updated and expanded Children's Dental Clinic. Staffed by board-certified pediatric dentists and outfitted with the latest in pediatric dental technology, the new clinic will provide your child with a lifetime of healthy smiles. All kids' smiles welcome, from the first tooth to 17 years old. Call 789-KIDS to make an appointment for your child today. This message brought to you by Search.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. And next we're going to be talking to a group of folks here who are all kind of coming together to do a summer show at the State Museum that we're going to talk about. So first we have Asia, who's a curator from Homer Museum. Is that right? The Homer Museum?
The Bunnell Street Art Center.
Okay, sorry. But in Homer.
That's correct.
Okay, right. And Rika, an artist that's going to be showing in this upcoming summer show. And Addison from the State Museum. So Addison, I'll start with you. Maybe tell us a little bit about what's happening at the State Museum, and then we'll kind of talk to the folks that are going to be on display here.
Sure. Yeah. We're opening our summer exhibit tonight. Decolonizing Alaska opens tonight and is on exhibit there in the museum until the middle of October. So we're here just to talk about that. And our opening reception is tonight at 4:30 to 6:30. The galleries will be open and free of charge. And then after that, there's a panel discussion to follow with eight wonderful artists in the show. Asia's going to be there, and of course, Rika, Ben Schlieffman, Melissa Shaganoff, Crystal Worrell, Michael Welsh, Ricky Tagaban, and Joel Isaac, all going to be there tonight. We've got a great activity planned.
Great, yeah, some familiar names there that I've had the pleasure of even knowing some of those folks and definitely seeing their work. So, Asia, tell me a little bit about, were you the main curator for this show? So tell me a little bit about what you were looking for with this theme of decolonization in Alaska.
Absolutely. I observed over the last 20-some years of curating from Homer that in a variety of exhibit formats, solo and invitational shows, some interesting themes were coming up that to me kind of express a confluence of concerns shared by Alaskan artists of both indigenous and non-native origin. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and since my childhood, I've been interested in Alaskan stories and Alaskan experiences and also the history of Alaska. And something I started to see surfacing are what I would describe as very individual stories that have sort of universal value that really reach beyond Alaska. Because in fact, as Alaska's position in the world to me has really changed from my perspective since I was a kid. You know, I grew up in the woods without a TV like many Alaskan mm-hmm. kids and really felt kind of very far from the real world. And what I've noticed and felt is that concerns about climate change have really pushed Alaska from the periphery of international awareness to the center, as Alaska is at the leading edge of climate change, and how that change affects culture, affects cultural sustainability, is a deep concern to many Alaskan artists because they might be using indigenous materials or be very concerned about the sustainability of Alaska's resources. And so some things like Alaska's position as a resource state, historically, a state that was first developed and exploited by Russian fur traders arriving to, enslave natives and begin a religious as much as an economic conquest and sort of moving through a cascade of colonizations that include oil, timber, gold, fish, et cetera. And all of these themes come up in really interesting ways, especially if you're drawn to salmon skin, which is, for example, a really beautiful, durable, traditional, and archival material. But imagine a situation that's a true story where about 25 years ago, an artist from the boundary states of the continental U.S. came up and, as a fiber artist, was really fascinated by seeing a fish skin basket from the Yukon River in the permanent collection at the Anchorage Museum. And she saw this beautiful basket and she thought about how was it made. And she tried to find out and she realized that people living today, indigenous people, didn't know how it was made. So she studied the basket. And this artist, Fran Reed, who has taught hundreds of Alaskans to work in this media of fish skin, basically resuscitated what was almost a lost art. And there's two artists in the exhibit who are dealing with fish skin. Mm-hmm. One's a Homer-based fisherwoman, and the other is Joel Isaac, who is a Dena'ina origin Alaskan who has a beautiful piece of expanded cinema in the museum. He's depicting a dance that's happening behind a fish skin screen in the movie that you can see there. So what you see is an interesting kind of intersection of like media concerns, issues, scientific, political, identity related.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rika, explain to me a little bit about the mediums you work in, and maybe it's always a hard question to ask an artist, but how you would describe the types of work that you do.
The type of work I do now is using natural materials that I find and gather around where I live, and I come from a jewelry making background, and I don't use metal anymore. And so what I'm using is gathered materials, using jewelry as metaphor, but to speak about beauty, handing down to the next generation, preciousness, same issues with jewelry, but I'm using nature to say the same thing, is that we want to hand it to the next generation. It is beautiful. It is precious. It's irreplaceable. And so my piece is a set of three what I call judicial callers, and I am calling for nature to have a voice in our judicial system, because as Alaska refers, at least from our political leadership as a resource state, I call that to task because it is really coming on the backs of other populations and other humans, other cultures. And by resource extraction, we are actually detaching the indigenous beings, including humans, from their own habitat.
And so the work that you do when you're, say, comes from a jewelry background, not intended to be worn as jewelry, intended to specifically be an artwork that's looked at to represent
these
ideas.
Yes, I think I've gotten more and more away from wearability, mm-hmm. but it's almost ceremonial in
mm-hmm.
in message.
Or an inspiration, or
yeah,
so that's where
it is wearable. these pieces are, but you wouldn't wear them to the office. Or
right.
Well, Ruth Bader Ginsburg wore big fancy collars. Right.
And that's I was inspired by Ruth Bader Ginsburg collars and saying, you know, nature really needs a voice, because if nature doesn't have a voice, then we as humans don't really either. Exploitation comes on a grander scale, and I think humans, by being detached from nature, we're losing ourselves.
That's an interesting thing, and it actually ties into the fish baskets, using these natural resources in these functional ways.
Absolutely.
And then sort of how does that speak to how we've displaced those natural elements in these, you know, things that we wear or that we use in our everyday life.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating thing to think about. To explain a little bit more about the term when you say decolonization specifically. What are you trying to, what are some of the elements you're trying to get at there? What you explained before touches on it, but
Well, decolonization, I've realized in the past, I would say 4 or 5 years that I've been working on this exhibit, is actually a really a word of the day. As we look at the survivability, sustainability of indigenous people, as we think about planetary sustainability, and as we reconsider some of the categorical ways that we have thought about culture, science, and identity. And, you know, that kind of colonization that I'm speaking of is really kind of quite broad. For example, museums themselves can be colonized by historic ideas of identity. In those instances, what you might find are identity presented as kind of an interesting, romanticized relic. You know, so you might see, as in one of the really strong pieces in this exhibit, Once Upon a Time at the Anchorage Museum, the display of like the Yupik way of life was like inside of this, you know, glass case, and inside of which there was sort of this log and fir structure, and then there's these implements for, you know, living. And when people would see that, they would think of it as a culture that's not really alive today. And so one way of decolonizing within traditions of display is to show living culture and to show ways in which artists might make something or refer to a tradition or activity that's still very much alive.
It's almost a way of putting that culture into a box. Almost,
yeah, that there's that, absolutely.
Yeah, metaphorically, yeah.
And then there's just so many other interesting ways that we can think about colonization. Certainly I spoke of an obvious way in which a landscape could be colonized, right, by, industry, for example, and by even academic traditions or intellectual traditions, just thinking of things in certain sort of boxes and the discussion kind of happening in sort of narrow and even reductive ways that we understand culture.
Mm-hmm.
But probably the biggest, strength or virtue that sustains a culture anywhere is its adaptability and its innovation. And that is certainly how indigenous cultures are surviving today, where they are surviving, where they are thriving. Innovation and adaptation are really valued. And I think that within the arts, you find the strongest examples of that.
Mm. Well, we could go on talking about this, but unfortunately, we have to move on here. But it's a fascinating thing to talk about, fascinating show that's happening. And it's premiering tonight for First Friday here in town, which is awesome. So it's 4:30. Is that when it starts? Or?
Right, 4:30 to 6:30 with a lecture following.
Yeah, terrific. And once again, it's the summer show at the Alaska State Museum, the beautiful Alaska State Museum. And it's Decolonizing Alaska, Asia. Rika and Edison, thanks so much for coming in and telling us about it. And have a fantastic show.
Thank you for having us.
Great. Thank you.
Coming up next, here's Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 5th of May, 2017. May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, commemorating the Mexican victory over the French in the Battle of Puebla, 1862. 8,000 well-armed French troops were routed by 4,000 ill-equipped Mexican soldiers. Not a crucial battle, but a symbol of Mexican pride, a celebration of Mexican culture in this country, and adopted by many Americans regardless of their heritage, as St. Patrick's Day has been, or Oktoberfest, and heavily promoted by beer companies. It's the birthday of Søren Kierkegaard, born in Copenhagen, 1813, son of a wealthy wool merchant who left his son enough money to be financially independent for the rest of his life. Kierkegaard, who rarely left Copenhagen, but enjoyed walking around the city, chatting with people he met, including people of the servant or working class, who wealthy people ordinarily would ignore. And he wrote philosophy. It was Kierkegaard who gave us the idea of subjectivity, the idea that we all perceive the world differently, and the leap of faith, the idea that faith is not possible without doubt, that one must doubt the existence of God to have faith in the existence of God. He published books at his own expense, including Either Or, Works of Love, and The Sickness Unto Death. It's the birthday of the crusading journalist Nellie Bly, born Elizabeth Jane Cochran in Armstrong County, Pennsylvania, 1864. Nellie Bly was her pen name. She wrote exposés of working conditions in factories and sweatshops, sometimes working there undercover. She wrote in Pittsburgh and then at Joseph Pulitzer's New York World, where she posed as a mentally ill person. She convinced doctors that she was mentally ill, and so was committed to the notorious Blackwell's Island Women's Lunatic Asylum, and lived there for 10 days and wrote all about it. It's the birthday of the man who said, "No man is lonely while eating spaghetti," Christopher Morley, born Haverford, Pennsylvania, 1890. Prolific author, wrote 100 books, including novels like Parnassus on Wheels and Kitty Foyle, a sentimental bestseller in 1939 about an Irish-American office girl. Christopher Morley said, "You can blow up a man with gunpowder in half a second, while it may take 20 years to blow him up with a book, but the gunpowder destroys itself along with its victim, while a book can keep on exploding for centuries." Here's a poem for today by Robert Browning, entitled Now. Out of your whole life, give but a moment. All of your life that has gone before, all to come after it, so you ignore, so you make perfect the present, condense in a rapture of rage for perfection's endowment, thought and feeling and soul and sense merged in a moment, which gives me at last you around me for once, you beneath me, above me, me sure that despite of time, future time past, this tick of our lifetime's one moment, you love me. How long such suspension may linger? Ah, sweet, the moment eternal, just that and no more, when ecstasy's utmost, we clutch at the core, while cheeks burn, arms open, eyes shut, and lips meet. Robert Browning's poem, Now. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Home Advisor, matching homeowners with background-checked professionals for home projects, from minor repairs to major remodels. See homeowners' reviews, compare prices, and book appointments at homeadvisor.com. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
KTOO is thrilled for the upcoming evening with David Sedaris on May 14th. To alleviate crowding that night, we highly encourage ticket holders to pick theirs up before the event. Come by KTOO starting on Monday, May 8th through Friday, May 12th between the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Grab your tickets early so you just need to be seated that night. More information about seating, the book signing, and the wait list at ktoo.org. Again, pick up your Sedaris Will Call tickets in advance next week between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you, where I'm joined by Nell McConaughey, who's a local artist. And, Nell, you're displaying at the... You're the featured artist of the month, which, of course, starts on First Friday, so that's a real fun thing. And you say you're all set up. You're ready to go. It's okay that you're here.
It's okay that you're here.
But you've got to then quickly run over to the Juno Artist Gallery where you're displaying your work. So tell me a little bit about the kind of work you do. You said that you're kind of just brushed up on some of your skills recently and decided to make a whole new set of stuff.
I work both in stained glass and jewelry, but tonight and this month, I kind of am going back to my roots in metalsmithing, and I did a show based on things I originally learned in college and am revisiting in a different way, a different style. You know, years later, of course, it's going to be different. But more set stones, a lot of soldered metals, mostly sterling, some copper, various textures.
Now, when you do work, I'm a big fan of Antique Roadshow. Okay, so, right, you get that. And every now and then, like the jewelry, I don't really understand or know the history of all jewelry, right? But when you see, there's certain eras of jewelry that you see and you go, well, now that is amazing. Is there an era of jewelry or an era of artistic work that particularly you feel inspires you?
I really love Art Deco,
mm-hmm.
but personally, it's too fancy.
Okay.
There's too much going on. I like real simple classic things.
Because often I think of Art Deco as fairly simple geometric form.
It is simple geometric form, but tends to be
layered.
A lot of it.
Yeah, okay, right.
And it's not just very simple. And I'd go for more clean, classic.
And what draws you to that, do you think?
Just personal taste.
Is there a kind of purity of form, or is there something in particular when you're working on a piece of jewelry? Is it about the beauty of the piece, or are you trying to convey something?
There's a few pieces that do convey a message.
Mm-hmm.
I have for this show, there's an equality pendant.
That's very cool. All right.
Something that's reminiscent of mountains and water, kind of our environment. And there's other things that are very geometric, just very statement pieces, but very simple ones.
And so when you're doing a geometric piece, for instance, it's that sort of artistic question of how do you know when you're done? But like, so how do you know, is there a moment that you get to like, okay, now this is now satisfying or...
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully it comes to that. Not always, but
right.
that is the goal, yeah.
To get to a point. So how does working in jewelry go for you? Do you have something designed? Do you work on a piece of paper? Do you sort of say, okay, this is what I'm going to do? Or do you have elements that you just know, oh, I want to work around this stone or I want to work around this metal? Or how does that?
A little bit of both. For this show, I did a lot of drawings, sketches, just sitting down and pulling things either out of my head or from pictures I have seen or environment and knowing what items I had in stock, what stones I had, and what metals I have, and at least did some basic sketches. And then when I got in the studio, it was easier to kind of actually do something instead of try and figure out what to do.
Well, right. And you kind of have a plan.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then you also work in stained glass. Does stained glass influence your work in jewelry and vice versa?
Sometimes I do use the stained glass in the jewelry, and I'll use jewelry pieces in stained glass as well. I do have a half dozen glass pieces that are new for this show as well. So some of that is a fused glass, and some of it is mostly my mirrors. Most people in town know my Spiral Studio mirrors.
Uh-huh. And I guess in part of my question does the fact that you're a stained glass artist change how you approach jewelry? Or, you know, is that something
I'm
that...
I'm sure there is some influence because it...
Or does it give you a leg up? Or does it allow you to be strong in one area that maybe... I don't know. It's interesting you have these two areas of focus. They're both very tactile, right? It's a type of artwork that's very much about really working I would think. I mean, yeah. I haven't done either one. But
they're both what I would call a skilled craft.
Right, right.
Artisan work.
Yeah.
Sometimes I make stuff, and sometimes I get to make art. And I think for this show, I got to make art, which has been fun.
I get stained glass is interesting because, of course, you're so much dealing with light. Like, how light interacts with it is a huge element of how that piece is going to express itself.
Right.
And I guess that's the same. That really is the same thing with a lot of jewelry work as well. I mean, especially gemstones and things like that, but also even with metals and what kind of metals you choose.
Light has some effect. Mm-hmm. And with metals, especially like silver, which is so reflective, how you deal with that reflection is pretty interesting. Maybe that relates to the mirrors, too. We have reflection going in many different ways.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to take photographs of my work is very hard.
Right, taking a photograph of a mirror. Yes, that's tough. Have to have different people stand in it and take the photograph or something.
It is a challenge.
Well, Nell, fascinating talking to you. Thanks so much. Nell McConaughey, her work at Juno Artists Gallery is starting in mere moments. So rush on over to the gallery and make sure it's one of your stops tonight on First Friday. She's the featured artist all this month. And most of the work she's featuring during this show is jewelry, but you also have a few of your stained glass pieces and mirror pieces as well on display.
Correct.
Okay, great. Well, Nell, thanks so much for coming in and have a great show.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay, come
everybody
on next. Yeah.
Come on down.
All right. and thanks so much for coming in. And we're going to get to our next guest in just a moment.
She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy, empty as a pocket. Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose. Sing ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na.
This is Bird Note. Each spring, 8 species of swallows wing north from the tropics to nest in North America. The fleet and graceful flight of swallows livens up the sky like no other birds. 2 of the 8 species, tree swallows and purple martins, are especially dependent on man-made nest boxes. Tree swallows nest over much of the continent, while purple martins are most prevalent east of the Rockies. The elegant, streamlined tree swallow measures just under 6 inches in length, but has a nearly 15-inch wingspan. Male tree swallows show deep, shiny blue above and gleaming white below. Purple martins, on the other hand, are the largest swallows on the continent, 8 inches long with an 18-inch wingspan. Male martins are unmistakable, glossy blue-black all over, while the females are more grayish. Tree swallows favor nest boxes at fence post height, while most purple martin nest boxes, which are often designed to house multiple pairs, are set 10 to 15 feet above ground. So put up nest boxes at your place and invite these beautiful swift birds to be your summer companions. Thanks for listening to Bird Note. I'm Mary McCann.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Katie Bosler has joined me from Bartlett Regional Hospital. Katie.
Good afternoon, Andy.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Got a few things we can talk about today. Number one, we want to talk about obviously a serious subject and something that feels like it's on the rise. It's opioid treatment and the steps that Bartlett is taking. So tell me a little bit about
what's exciting, Andy, is that Rainforest Recovery Center at Bartlett Hospital is implementing and enacting a medication-assisted treatment program for opioid addiction. Now, the details on that you would need to learn from Rainforest Recovery, and I can give a phone number at the end of our interview about
sure.
that. but I really want to let people know that we have a pretty exciting event happening right here in the K2 building on Monday evening. We are bringing in a doctor, Rachel Solotarov, and she's the chief medical officer for Central City Concern in Portland, Oregon. And her organization or nonprofit uses a comprehensive, like, integrated approach to address the needs of individuals by providing them housing, health, recovery assistance. To a degree, Rainforest Recovery does the same thing. And she's going to talk about this medication-assisted treatment where you use a couple of different drugs, not methadone, but one of them is called naltrexone, and the other one is buprenorphine. And that can support, it's with the prescribed medications that can support someone who is trying to get off of opioids.
So, and it speaks to the complications around this issue, right?
Yes.
So there's a chemical thing that's happening. There's an addictive substance that's there. But that substance is also has changed brain chemistry. It has changed those things, right? So then that is something that needs to be adjusted to and is a long-term thing. Then there's a lifestyle thing, right? And then there's a social nature and a cult. You know, it's so multifaceted, and it just seems like there's such a large effort that needs to be applied to this specific issue.
Right, right. So, yeah, we're pretty thrilled that we're able to bring up this expert from Portland on this issue, this Dr. Rachel Solotarov. So she will be giving a lecture starting at 6:30. And, you know, when you go to at 360 events, because they're taped for future broadcast on 360 public television, you want to be there before 6:30 because it starts sharp. Otherwise, speaking from experience, you miss the event.
The door is locked.
Yes, I don't know how that can happen. But then after Dr.
Yes.
Solotarov,
I don't know how you could be late for a show, for instance. I don't know if you heard the beginning of this show, but I was not hosting at the beginning of this show, Katie, because I came in late. Yes, Jeff Brown covered for me.
I know nothing about being late.
I know. Neither one of us. Listen, so that's actually a great point because it starts at 6:30, but it's not one of those Juno events where you wander in the first 10 minutes.
Right.
It starts sharp at 6:30. And because it's treated like a television studio, once it's going, so they don't have people walking in front of the cameras. It's,
right. Yeah.
That's important to know.
So after,
and what day is that again?
This is Monday,
okay.
May 8th. So
okay.
It's this coming Monday at 6:30.
Right.
And sometimes these events are a little earlier. So this is 6:30. So that gives you time to maybe get back from work, you know, have some dinner. And then after the talk by Dr. Solotarov on this medication-assisted treatment for opioid addiction, there will be a question and answer period. And at that point, Dr. Jenna Highstand, who works with Bartlett and for Bartlett, and she is our medical director for behavioral health, she's going to introduce Rainforest Recovery's office-based medication-assisted treatment program. So it's not a residential program. It's office-based.
Okay. So that's the opioid issue and some of the things that are happening, and a great way to start the discussion and understand some of these alternative treatments that are happening.
Yeah.
There's other stuff happening next week, right?
Too? There is. And also, before we move on to the next thing I want to talk about, is if you want more information about this medication-assisted treatment at Bartlett's Rainforest Recovery Center, and you have some questions, maybe you have a loved one who is struggling with addiction to opioids and you want to try to help them, give Rainforest Recovery a call. And the number is 796-8654. That's 796-8654.
Okay, so what else is happening next
week? Well,
the other thing, on
a lighter note,
happening, yes.
Did you know, Andy, that a little over 600 Juno residents work at Bartlett.
You just told me that a minute ago, but I was kind of floored. I can't believe that 600 people work at Bartlett. You know, obviously it's a large facility and it's working 24/7.
Yeah.
So there's a large staff and it's such an interesting thing because not only are those, I mean, that's such a great thing for a community to have a thriving well-run and well-staffed hospital, and obviously it's a regional hospital, so it's a really important resource for this entire region.
Yeah.
But it's also a great, you know, it's really great for this community. This, the economy of this community depends on those 600 jobs. All those kinds of things are really such an integral part of the community and a part of, you know, what Bartlett brings to the community.
Yeah, and they are on, of course, we are on the front lines of emergency health care. There's a lot goes on at Bartlett every day. And so in recognition of our healthcare providers, Bartlett joins in something called National Hospital Week. It's also National Nurses Week next week, which is approximately May 6th, 7th through the 13th, 14th. And so
it's kind of a squishy week there.
Well, to be exact, you know, I think 1 week is 6th to the 12th, the other one 7th to the 14th,
but
never mind.
They overlap.
They do, yeah. But the kind of cool thing about that is that Bartlett really celebrates our healthcare providers every day, and we have a gift that each provider receives from the administration of Bartlett. We also have like a root beer float afternoon. We have a free chicken, you know, kind of barbecue on Wednesday.
Nice.
And then Friday is the Florence Nightingale Award to culminate the week, which is a nurse is chosen by the medical staff as the nurse of the year every year. And so on a week from this afternoon, Salud Elizarde will be receiving that award.
Well, congratulations to Salud. And Katie, we're running out of time here, but thanks so much for coming in and letting us know all about that's happening, about the lecture that's coming up on Monday. That's it, everyone, for Juno Afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO.